Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
High atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
The nation's unemployment rate falls to a mere 9.4%. Four Loko returns without the caffeine.
Woo.
And an Oregon woman is convicted of sexually assaulting a dog.
All right. I realized too late that a variation on woohoo doesn't really go as far as you think it would.
No, there's not a good woohoo for that last one, really.
Because then I just sound like the sexual harassment panda.
You make me very sad.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, probably appalled, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Friday, January 7th, 2011. Four Loko is making its way back to store shelves in the state of Washington. The caffeinated alcoholic drink was pulled after an incident in Ellensburg, where nine underage Central Washington University students were hospitalized after drinking it. The makers of Four Loko have removed the caffeine, and the Washington State Liquor Control Board approved the change December 8th. Notice that was the liquor control board, not the caffeine control board. I'm unclear on some of this. Critics of the drink say they are the equivalent of five beers and two cups of coffee in a single can. People who have actually drunk them aren't entirely sure that that's accurate, but what the hell.
I'm sorry if I seem like I'm not listening to you. It's only because I'm not listening to you. I should say at this moment, so if for some reason apparently our signal is going out, but it is not reaching Cascadia.fm.
Oh.
So I'm not entirely sure why that is. So I'm going to do a quick... I know we are broadcasting in the larger sense to other places. It's just not getting from here to there, apparently.
Okay.
So if you can plunge on ahead like nothing's wrong, Don.
I'll just keep talking about the news, you can push some buttons.
I'm going to do a quick little recon here, which will involve me stepping out into the hallway for about 5 seconds, and I'll be right back.
So I could say anything I want, and you wouldn't know.
Ladies and gentlemen, Don Taylor.
All right. A Multnomah County patrol sergeant on routine patrol arrested two people accused of moving 54 pounds of marijuana through the city. Lieutenant Mary Lindstrand said Sergeant Tim Wanacott pulled over Anthony Huang along Interstate 405 near the Everett Street exit for committing a traffic violation. His passenger, Tracy Noyan, was also arrested. When Wanacott approached the silver BMW, he could smell marijuana coming from the vehicle. Packed inside the small car were several boxes fully loaded with 54 pounds of marijuana. Lindstrand said the drugs were individually packaged into one-pound bags. The way the material was packaged, Lindstrom said, it made it clear the marijuana was being moved for delivery. The value of the pot is valued at $150,000 to $200,000, according to deputies. Both suspects were charged with possession of marijuana and delivery of marijuana. That happened.
That's really interesting, Don. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
Whatever it was you said was really, that's great.
Hey, Patrick, come here.
Keep up the good
work. My husband happens to be here, so just sit there for a moment while Rick's gone. Just come on, sit down. Sit down. Just because I need somebody to talk to while I'm telling these stories. You can just say anything. So
the key is to occasionally just reference Star Wars.
Yeah.
Or to kiss.
So just anything you
say something about Gene Simmons, yeah.
Right. Just be Arthur. Anything. Okay. So Patrick, here's an interesting story.
Really?
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, my husband Patrick Hurley.
Hi.
Yeah. A neighborhood watch group in Kissimmee, Florida, is warning families to lock up their power boxes because children are shutting off electricity to homes.
Okay.
Over the last few months, power has been randomly turned off to at least six homes in the Oaks Golf Club and community off South Orange Blossom Trail in Kissimmee, Florida. The neighborhood watch group's website says, quote, kids are turning off power in the Oaks, and the only way to stop them is for everyone to put a small lock on their power box.
Or beat their kids.
Well, they could. The group said it's legal for homeowners to place a lock on their power box. It's not known how the children are turning off the power via the power box.
Midichlorians.
According to the website.
Really? Did I earn that laugh right there, or was that...
Pity.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for being honest about it anyway.
According to the website, an elderly couple was recently taunted by some children who turned off power to their home. So that happened in Kissimmee.
So they're going feral.
Yes, feral children in Florida.
That's a lot like this thing that happened back in the 1980s when we were all growing up. Remember when we were all growing up? Remember stuff that happened then? I'm talking about it now that we're adults.
Yeah.
Ha!
Eric Tetstone, 43, was indicted on Wednesday, in U.S. District Court for the Northern District. He was charged with sex trafficking of a child. He apparently was in Toledo, Ohio. And he tried to sell a 16-year-old girl for $300 to a man inside a Starbucks.
Pretty good price.
You think? $300 for a 16-year-old?
Sure.
Okay. That's shocking because I didn't see him like that, said Tetstone's former East Side neighbor, who didn't want to be identified.
No, they were like thinking $500.
Yeah. The FBI said Tetstone entered the downtown coffee shop with two young women but exited the store with only one. They made the arrest on the sidewalk when the suspect was leaving. Authorities won't say if he was trying to sell both girls, but according to the documents, the 16-year-old who was traded for money told the FBI, "When I saw Eric take the money, I knew that I had just been sold." You're not very good at this. Jump in with anything.
Who remembers Small Wonder? Hey now.
Okay. Sex trafficking, by the way, isn't a new problem in Ohio. Toledo, Ohio, ranks fourth in the U.S. when it comes to child sex trafficking.
There's nothing better to do here in Ohio.
Yeah. Speaking of Starbucks, by the way, they have a new logo. They unveiled a logo that doesn't have the word Starbucks encircling the mermaid picture.
Yeah.
Because they decided that they don't need to have the word Starbucks on their thing anymore.
They're just that ubiquitous.
Exactly. They said the brand has become so widely recognized that it's no longer needed to reinforce its name at every turn.
Well, good for them. They own everything.
The interesting thing is their logo, if you look at their logo, it's the circle and it's got the mermaid with the split tail and she's holding both parts of the tail. But you don't really see like her below the hips. And the original Starbucks logo was the entire mermaid.
She's got boobs.
And she had boobs and she had her tail and she's holding it.
Yeah.
And people thought it was obscene because, first of all, there were complaints because you could see nipples. There were little dots where there were nipples. And she was holding the two parts of her mermaid tail, which they thought people complained said it looked like she had her legs spread.
Mm.
So they actually edited the logo down so that it's cut off before the bottom of her body and you don't see boobs anymore.
I just think it looks more like my Mike Mignola art.
You think so?
A little bit.
Hmm. A driver had to be cut from his car after hitting a utility pole this morning. Actually, that was yesterday morning because we didn't do the news yesterday, so I still have news left over.
Apparently, we're not doing the news today. It's
no?
just sort of it's theoretical. We are just...
FYI, so we are broadcasting, and I'm trying to figure out exactly sort of what is going on here. But by the way, thank you, Patrick. Sure. That was great.
Thanks for sitting in.
That thing you said about the stuff that was gold, man.
Good day.
Yeah.
Bye.
All right. There you go. All right. Well, in any event, if you are listening to us right now via, the Rick Emerson mobile stream, or if you're listening to us at Rick Emerson Show, where we sort of simulcast this, then you are hearing us correctly. So we are in fact broadcasting. To say that we're not is actually not entirely accurate. The stream somehow is not being picked up at Cascadia.fm, though. So the reason we're continuing to talk, by the way, is A, because this is simulcasting over at RickEmersonShow.com. So it is being heard right there. So there are, we are broadcasting to tens of people right now. There because
you're
we
special.
Just we sort of kick that on early before we start the Rick Emerson Show, and also because this is going to be up later on as a podcast.
At the moment, scintillating podcast,
as a podcast in which I'm speaking now almost entirely, to the people who are sort of accidentally tuning in early over at the Rick Emerson Show website and on the mobile stream. So I have just verified with a couple people and checked it on my own phone that the stream is actually leaving the building correctly. It is apparently my guess right now, just because I know people love to hear the behind-the-curtain discussion. My guess right now is that at the Cascadia Studios, somehow there was something happened to interrupt the signal or the connection, because we send out the feed and they connect to it on their end, and then and it plays through their system. My guess right now, by looking at everything and the way it's set up and by checking it through a couple outside sources, is that it got disconnected somehow at Cascadia, and right now it is running in what we might call unattended mode.
So the show is just sort of leaking out of a tube all over the floor at Cascadia somewhere.
Yes, and so, but here's the great and really sad part about it, by the way, is that I'm looking at the text messages, and there's a lot of, I keep checking the speakers in my computer. I think there might be something wrong with them. So,
right as we were starting, I actually posted to Twitter that right now we're starting Legion of News.
Yeah.
And then Kristen Bowie responded by saying, I know Ken has, and a sad face.
let me ask you this, Don Taylor. Yeah. Have you a direct telephone number to that fine emporium of broadcasting?
Wait, hold on.
I think we may be back.
Are we?
I think we may be.
Are we on the air?
I think we may have returned. Wait, there we go. No, we're back. I've confirmed it. All right,
we're back. I'm
right.
Saying on Twitter to the three people that actually care.
All right. So I had, because while Patrick was, by the way, doing a yeoman's job of holding down the chair over here.
My husband, who is a delightful human being and under most circumstances actually a very funny guy, does not have any performance skills.
He has a distinct understated sort of laconic sensibility about things.
And plus, when you put him on the spot and go, sit down at a microphone, be funny, it's kind of, even if you do have performance skills, that's difficult. So he was just kind of like, I don't know what to say.
I should take a moment right now because I'm going to recap everything we just said. So
okay.
If you were listening to the podcast, this is going to be the second time in about 2 minutes that you've heard this. So for reasons that are sort of unknown to us that we will figure out later, everything seemed to be working fine moments before the broadcast, and we were sending everything, and once noon hit and Legion of News actually was supposed to, and by the way, the best thing about today is that it falls on the heels of yesterday when we had an entirely separate problem which just had to do with my inferior earth brain. So when we went to do Legion of News, when we went to start the show at noon, it was feeding everywhere except to Cascadia.fm for some reason. And so we're not entirely sure why that is, but I'm getting a lot of nice of you to join us today, Mr. Emerson, messages. So,
but this time it wasn't our fault. I will just say that. I'm not saying there is fault to be had, but I'm saying this wasn't us.
So Sabrina is actually noting from Cascadia. she says, yes, we just figured you weren't going to show up today. Thank you. I appreciate that. As she says, you're back. She said, this is Sabrina. Technical difficulties on our end. We have been recording everything, though. So all of this glorious 12 minutes or whatever it's been, which consisted of a fantastic opening, followed by screeching from 60 to 0, followed by me saying, I'm going to stand in the hallway, followed by Patrick sort of going, yeah, into the microphone, followed by the same technical explanation or non-explanation twice in a row. followed by this moment here.
It's entertainment gold.
The thing is, it's been archived in digital quality for future generations. This is like any of those Chuck Berry records that are encased in gold they send out on Voyager 2. This will be poured over by future generations, and they will say, this was their entertainment, this proud race of people.
This was civilization at its finest.
This was how they amused themselves, these builders of empires.
Thousands of years of evolution led to this.
All right. Okay. Let's just, hold on, you are not losing your mind if you're listening out there. We're going to do a little something here. Okay, and there we go.
Oh, good.
Hello, Don Taylor. How are you today?
I'm good. I've kind of lost track of what I talked about at this point. But
the best week ever. I'm glad the 2011 is off to a roaring start. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Friday, January 7th, 2011. Coming up later on this hour, we have your entertainment news, also Science on the March. If you want to get this program later on the day via iTunes, you can do that. It is also available as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. And you can get it on your mobile device sometimes at mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. That is all on the way. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor.
So if you missed the first few minutes
of
the show...
You're doing that thing you do right now?
What?
By the way, here's a thing that you have started to do more recently.
Oh, what?
Here's a tell you have verbally.
Oh, good.
It is... It's the...
Make me self-conscious.
It is when you are... it's when you are waiting for me to finish saying something so that you can make an observation, and it's you're just like... You're just playing out the thread of whatever my conversation is. You do this. You do...
Do I?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yes, you do.
Then.
You can sense when I'm sort of within 10 or 15 seconds of finishing my statement.
Wow.
And it's, you know what it is? It's the verbal equivalent of putting quarters up on the rail of a video game to indicate that you have the next round of asteroids. You can sense that I'm getting toward the climactic, the sort of the wind up of whatever it is I'm... See, that was a more pronounced version of it just now.
I'm interacting.
I'm just effing with you. That actually wasn't it. But it's this small, it's almost inaudible. Where you go, And the reason I notice it...
Maybe I'm whimpering in pain.
It sounds quite a lot like a Phil Hendry character named Bobby Dooley. And so it's a thing that I noticed about 10 days ago. And so every day that you do it, I get this weird little where the air just shimmers for a second, and I feel like I've fallen into some weird nether region where I'm in a room with one of Phil Hendry's fictitious creations. And then it's like my whole world has gone cubist.
Well, thank you for sharing this with me on the air, where I'm exceptional, even more self-conscious about it.
Somebody just noted, by the way, without even prompting, she's the Bobby Dooley to your Phil Hendry.
That's great.
Hello, Don Taylor.
Hi.
All right. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
Anyway, if you missed the earlier part, Four Loko is being sold in Washington again, but without the caffeine. Multnomah County cops stopped some people and found 54 pounds of marijuana. Starbucks has a new logo without the word Starbucks in it. And a guy in Toledo, Ohio, sold a 16-year-old girl for $300 at a downtown Starbucks.
$300?
Yeah, that does seem...
Why did they take the word Starbucks out of the logo? That doesn't make any sense. Do they just assume that everybody knows what it is now?
Yeah, they figure it's just the mermaid now. They figured everybody knows what it is. It's green. It's got the mermaid. They're ubiquitous enough that nobody needs to actually see the word Starbucks anymore.
But what is the... I don't understand. I guess I can understand that. That's like saying that the Golden Arches are ubiquitous and everybody knows that they're synonymous with McDonald's.
And the Nike swoosh. I mean, there's a lot of logos that don't have the name of the company in them.
Yeah, but I mean, what is the... I mean, I'm not disputing that people see Starbucks, the logo, and they know exactly what store they're... they know what it represents. But what is the upside? I don't know that there's... There's no upside to taking out the word Starbucks. Like, there's no net gain there. That just seems like a waste of time and money.
As someone who worked at Starbucks for a year and watched them go through three major changes in the 1 year I worked there, including, relabeling all of their bags of coffee with these fancy new labels that were almost impossible to read, but they had really pretty pictures on them, and them putting in new furniture in all of the stores and changing the colors of some of the aprons. I mean...
Is there just no rhyme or reason?
No. What it is there's a whole crew of people that work for Starbucks whose entire job is to, keep it fresh and to make changes and to update things and make sure nobody gets bored. And,
okay.
You know, and so.
I guess that is the that is what our friend Bruce Agler would call the lights up, lights down theory. Which I think there is some basis to this. The idea that it doesn't matter what the change is, as long as things are adjusted every now and again, it sort of keeps people not off balance. That's the wrong way to put it, but it sort of keeps people's interest constantly. You'll forgive the pun, perked and peaked.
I mean, it gives you the psychological impression that things are fresh and new.
That they're evolving.
That
we're not the same. That we're not just shoving pieces of dirty bean through water
right. And
then serving it to you for $9.
Yes.
All right. Okay. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, we got your entertainment news, also Science on the March, and so forth. Here is Don Taylor.
Employers added 103,000 jobs to the payroll in December, far lower than forecast. Still, the country's unemployment rate fell to 9.4%, down from November's 9.8%, and its lowest level since May of 2009. Part of the reason behind that decrease is that officials at the Labor Department revised October and November figures to show 70,000 more jobs than were previously reported. President Obama says his economic team still has plenty of work to do to help stimulate the economy further.
Wait, does that just mean they were lying? When you say that they adjusted it, adjusting it retroactively just sounds like they were making things up.
I think it kind of does. Yeah,
okay.
It's like they basically you can do anything with numbers.
We can't show anybody these numbers; they're terrible.
Yeah, so if they say, well, we'll just take this whole sector that we hadn't included previously and throw it into the mix. Look, the numbers go up.
I see. Okay, therefore, voila! Look, we have growth.
Right.
Okay. All right. This is Economy One?
Yes.
Overall, the decline in the unemployment rate is positive news, but it only underscores the importance of us not letting up on our efforts.
Here's, by the way, where you can tell when a politician is about to give you bad news disguised as something else. It's when they say, well, look, overall, or if you take the long view of things, or in a broad sort of sense, or what these figures really indicate is that just means that you're just about to get bent over again, but they're trying to they're trying to disguise it as a massage.
Do you want to end this this story, by the way, on an up note or on a downer, more realistic note?
Is the up note completely deceptive and without actual basis or merit?
Pretty much.
Well, let's go with that, though.
Okay, so I'll give you the bad news first.
Okay, so which cut am I playing next?
Well,
year?
We're gonna end with the people lying to us.
Oh, awesome!
Because make us feel better.
Fantastic.
One of the reasons the numbers are lower is because some people simply stopped looking for work. Despite the seemingly good news on the unemployment rate front, the December figures were mostly disappointing and a sign the economy is still slagging. And a further sign that the Federal Reserve will continue with its asset-buying program as part of the plan for more monetary stimulus. Reuters says economists expected an increase of 175,000 jobs, while Bloomberg says 150,000. In reality, private hiring increased 113,000, while government employment fell by 10,000 jobs.
I'm so confused. I have no idea what any of this means.
Well, economists were saying, woohoo, we're going to get 175,000 more jobs. Bloomberg said, woohoo, we're going to get 150,000 more jobs. Private hiring actually only increased by 113,000 more jobs. And government employment dropped by 10,000.
So everybody said it was going to be great, and then it was less so.
Right.
Okay.
But Obama says there's still good reason to be optimistic about the job market.
I think that's because he's got a job, really.
Yeah.
The economy added 1.3 million jobs last year. And each quarter was stronger than the previous quarter, which means that the pace of hiring is beginning to pick up.
Well, when he says each quarter was stronger than the previous quarter, that doesn't mean stronger than, like, that doesn't mean it's stronger than the previous, like all previous quarters throughout the last like 10, 20, or 50 years. That just means it was stronger than the previous quarter last year, which is the most relative kind
right.
of improvement.
Which was still like the lowest level since May of 2009.
That's like if I come over and I set you on fire, but then they put part of you out, and so it's only like your lower third that's covered in flames. Really, that's a net gain, I suppose.
Yeah, you can say, hey, look, you're less in pain now that I put you out.
You're less engulfed in flames right now.
Right.
And it's also that thing where, you know, the whole thing about, you know, when you're unemployed, it's, it's a depression. When your neighbor's unemployed, it's a recession. So when they're talking about adding jobs, the other thing is, how many jobs did you say they added? 1.9 million? But there's some figure in there where I think it was in that soundbite where he said they added like 1.9 million jobs. These are typically,
if I understand the way that this sort of dynamic works, these are typically the sort of jobs that you must then have five of to pay your bills. So it ends up being a bit of a wash.
And considering that private hiring only increased by 113,000.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
Then he must mean over the course of what, since he's been in office?
Or did they just create jobs and then just nobody wanted them? They're just sort of sitting there like a pair of unused Air Jordans.
Yeah.
All right.
Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke told the Senate Friday there's evidence the U.S. economy is getting stronger. However, he warned this might not continue if the job market doesn't rebound.
Persistently high unemployment by damping household income and confidence could threaten the strength and sustainability of the recovery.
Here's the thing about guys like that. It's like listening to Alan Greenspan, who may or may not know what he's talking about any more than any other economist. But I just instinctively believe the guys who sound as though that they are preparing to flee the country because of the imminent financial implosion.
Yeah.
You know, those guys, you just figure that they've got like some sort of a hovercraft or a castle or something, and they're just going to go sit there like that Haddon guy in Contact and just wait out the financial storm. It's much easier for me to believe those guys, and I don't think that's just because I'm a pessimist. It's just because they just sound so bloodless and matter of fact about it. This guy doesn't sound like he's trying to convince me of anything.
No.
This
persistently high unemployment by damping household income and confidence could threaten the strength and sustainability of the recovery.
Now, if you compare that to this guy,
the economy added 1.3 million jobs last year.
One of those guys sounds like he's trying to get you to buy something. And so that's the guy that I instinctively trust less. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Here is Don Taylor.
A Jefferson, Oregon woman has been sentenced to 30 days in jail and 60 months of supervised probation after pleading guilty to charges of sexual assault of an animal and criminal mistreatment. The Statesman Journal reports that Rachel Pedersen and her now ex-husband, Sam Pedersen, were arrested in April after police found home video of them sexually assaulting dogs.
What have we said, Don, on the show about stories that involve cruelty to animals?
Well, at least this doesn't go into detail. But it's big news. You got to read this story because it's...
We really don't have to. We really don't have to read any stories.
Yeah, I guess.
Really, I mean, if you listen to the first 12 minutes of the show today, I mean, the evidence would indicate that we don't actually have to broadcast sound of any kind at all. Sort of optional.
Yeah.
Now, when you say assaulting the animal, is this... I apologize to Cheryl and to, whatever member of her family always seems to tune in, like, right at these moments. It's like I put up some sort of invisible, like, bat signal, and it's a sort of Cheryl's, Aunt Dolores must tune in at this moment, and then it's right before we talk about a guy being, like, getting, like, a good clown raping or something. So when they're talking about sexually assaulting the animal, is this one of those weird inversion stories, though, where... Again, sorry, where the animal was pitching, but they somehow want to frame it as though, like, the animal wasn't getting anything out of this?
I believe so. They're calling it sexual assault because, dogs...
If you got the dog duct taped down and you're just, going at it with a hairbrush, that's one thing.
Yeah.
But if the dog is really, if that's a both sides of the equation kind of a thing.
Dogs, like minors, are considered by law unable to informed consent.
I thought you were trying to inform me that dogs did, in fact, prefer minors.
No.
Rick, dogs like minors.
Dogs, in the same way that the law views minors.
All right.
Dogs, the law believes that animals cannot give informed consent. Therefore, it is assault.
Okay. But it's okay just to, like, cut their balls off, apparently.
Well,
that's a thing you can do. I think if you really let the dog have a say in that, probably they would always vote no, so...
Yeah, so anyway, they were investigating sex abuse charges, and they found video of the woman and the dogs.
Now, okay, so...
And the thing is, she's doing 30 days in jail and 60 months of probation. Her husband, by the way, who I guess was the guy with the video camera...
The ringleader.
Who also... They also found him with child pornography. He is charged with child pornography and was sentenced last year to 43 years in prison.
All right. Well, now it all makes a lot more sense. That's a whole lot of... That's a lot of what else can we find to stick them with?
Yeah.
To speak. That is where they're just trying to run up the score on them. And, and justifiably so. All right. Well, I feel, But so this is probably now... If you look at it, probably a win-win, except for them. It's a win for the man who gets to put Cretans behind bars for the longest period of time possible. It sounds like it was probably, let's be honest, a win for the dog. At least for a certain period of time. Although the dog's going to have, I would imagine, unreasonably high or low expectations of his future owners, depending on how you look at that.
Yeah.
You know, it's really just a lose for you know, for that couple. And so, you know, I feel less bad about that, though.
I hope whoever gets the dogs next is warned that this happened so that it doesn't happen that, like, you know, you give the dog a liver treat and suddenly the dog goes, hey, I know what this means. Because that would be startling.
It would be awkward. This whole day is already very awkward. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. The Rick Emerson Show comes up next hour. Coming up today, really? Nazi Watch again?
We have a Nazi Watch.
We have a lot of those. Nazi Watch next hour. Corpse Watch next hour. Mr. Big Jim Willig will be here with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101 today, talking about the life and career of Mr. Louis Black. As that's coming up today. Corpse Watch, Nazi Watch. Louis Black will be the subject of Humor Me Comedy 101. And today, improbably, we start the third round of Name That Snack because
we got to make this harder
on the basis of one clue yesterday. And it was just
the sound of you chewing the clue.
It was an auditory clue. It was oral evidence. It was just me going crunch on something. And a guy correctly guessed it. And we were attempting. I was going to try to wrangle him onto the show today to sort of figure out. Just to interrogate him a little bit about how it was he was able to do that. But I don't know if that's going to happen or not. But we will start round three. And by the way, I got to tell you, I sat here with Cheryl last night. We spent like, I don't know, like 35 minutes coming up with the clues for round three.
We got to start just way more broad. Like,
thing.
One of the ingredients is sodium.
I thought about going with like a sort of, you know, polybenzoate or whatever those things off the. But that is uncomfortably similar to a bit that David Brenner used to do. And I guess we're uncomfortably similar to that anyway. But David Brenner, who is an alleged comedian, you kids, and who may be dead for all I know.
No, I think, unfortunately, he's still alive. He still shows up every once in a while, and he's horrible.
Kind of looking like a weird sort of alternate universe Bob Denver. So David Brenner used to have this, back when they would just give syndicated radio programs to anybody, David Brenner did this bit called Stump the Hand. And Stump, which is really sort of a strange and unsettling turn of phrase. But Stump the Hand was this bit that he would do where he would have an item, and every day he would read you one ingredient off the label. And then the first person who was able to figure out what the item was based on the ingredients would then win something of negligible value. I swear to Christ, I think it was like a David Brenner calendar. And it was like a 12-month calendar, and every month had an exciting action pose of David Brenner, if you could imagine such a thing. And so he would just say, Today, I'm David Brenner, and today's installment of Stump the Hand. Your ingredient for the day is sodium biglycerol 80. Jeff, am I pronouncing that right? Okay, it's sodium biglycerol 80. That is your ingredient for Stump the Hand. Margaret, hello. You're on the David Brenner Show with Stump the Hand.
David, I love your show. We listen to it. My friend Yetta Pilch and I listen to your show every day here in Flushing.
Well, that's great. Do you know what? And it would just, and he would just sit there, and it was like time stopped. It was just
this isn't boding well for our name the snack.
Well,
bit,
you,
really,
I mean, you would have
think about it.
And not only that, but that we had our own sort of adventure with that, with the goddamn mystery sound contest that I did 3 years ago. So in any event. So I'll be ripping off David Brenner later on today over at RickEmersonShow.com. Don't miss it. Here's Don Taylor.
State wildlife managers have avoided a lawsuit by temporarily repealing a rule requiring review of a plan for black bears every 5 years. The Mail Tribune reports the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife took the action last week on a plan that had not been reviewed since 1998. The delay had led to the threat of a lawsuit from the conservation group Big Wildlife. Spencer Leonard, Big Wildlife's program director, criticized the move, but wildlife officials said they wanted to focus on the plan, not the potential lawsuit. The Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission was scheduled to decide Friday whether to keep or drop the mandatory 5-year review. So every 5 years, they're supposed to, like, take a look at the black bears. They hadn't taken a look at the black bears. These guys threatened to sue them for not looking at the bears.
The end.
Yeah.
Coming up later on this hour, we have your entertainment news right here at Cascadia.fm. You just looked at the clock and angrily shook your head.
Well, I'm angry. I'm angry at that we lost all that time, and I'm angry at that story because I see this thing. I have this thing where I see something, and it's about bears.
And you think it's going to be
gold.
And
I just immediately pull it because I love stories about bears, and then that was like the most boring thing ever.
Like a sentence into that story, my brain went, so what are we going to get for lunch later on today?
Yeah, I was reading it, and I lost track of time. It was...
How would you rate that on a scale of 1 to 5? Now, see, and you didn't lose before. See, before you even answered, well, see, that's above, you know, that's above average. That's like 60% or whatever, 65. That is 60%.
Most days I think we do a 4 or 5, though. I'm proud of our work here.
You know, the thing is, you didn't really lose that opening 12 or 13 minutes. They're going to live on, you know, in perpetuity forever. Because as Sabrina said, she's like, we've been recording everything over here. So, you know, that thing where Patrick was just sitting here and just going, that's something. And then sort of wheezing a little bit. That's going to be played forever and ever.
God bless Sabrina, too, because, you know, she was sitting there actually listening to it and going, oh, this is sad.
It's taken a sudden downward turn.
Why is their show so awful?
Going to put that in our demo reel. By the way, somebody just said, and I don't know whether this is a directive, like an imperative statement to me, whether I am being told to do something. The phrasing here, I think we're missing a comma or something that would add some explication to this. I don't know whether this is directed at you or me. It says, please calm down, Dawn, comma, you're making me sweaty. So I don't know whether I am supposed to be calming you or whether they are just instructing you to calm yourself.
Do I sound uncalm?
I don't know. It says, please calm down, Dawn, you're making me sweaty. Followed by, please cheer up, Sabrina, you're making me sweaty. So, apparently, sir, I think that might be a glandular problem.
Yeah.
I know that's more on your end, less over here. So I would consult a physician or maybe just put some duct tape on your skin.
Yeah, I don't think that has to do with us at all.
Yes. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for coming by. We have your science on the march and your entertainment news coming your way promptly. This is Don Taylor.
Speaking of which, let's do science.
Here's your science on the march for Friday, January 7th, 2011.
After the Deepwater Horizon exploded, at least 200,000 tons of methane bubbled into the Gulf of Mexico along with the oil. Scientists are still trying to figure out what happened to the oil, but now it looks like they have an answer for where all the methane went. Bacteria ate it. Scientists expect it to take years for naturally occurring bacteria to gobble up the methane, but it happened within 4 months. Some are having a hard time believing the study. One microbiologist said, it would take a superhuman microbe to do what they're claiming. Still, scientists insist that an important sign was that the oxygen left in the water appeared to precisely equal the amount needed for microbes to metabolize so much methane, but not enough to create dead zones. If true, the study could have important implications for global warming, since methane is a potent greenhouse gas. Some have raised the possibility that there could be a large natural release of methane that could speed up global warming. The findings give some hope that something could be done to combat that possible scenario, although scientists caution there could be other factors that might change the outcome, including colder weather where there aren't as many methane-gobbling organisms.
Could I see that story for just 1 second? Just hand that to me. I wanted to make sure that a scientist did, in fact, use the phrase a superhuman microbe. I think something is either a microbe or it's superhuman. I don't really know that it can be both.
It would have to be a super microbe, not a superhuman microbe.
Yeah, that's you know, it's sort of like, it's like a Vogon. It's not humanity, it's Vogonity, kids. Just remember. All right. And by the way, let's just acknowledge the fact that there probably are, you know, super microbial organisms that have been released from, like, that robot-punching lab in Sweden or, you know, from Japan. So
probably
it's,
Japan.
You know, at this point, like the web of like, lies and deception over the whole... Because this is the whole BP thing, right?
Yeah.
The whole BP spill, which... So I have just, like, months ago, I mean, I think it was, like, 2 or 3 weeks into the story, I think I was just sort of zen with the fact that I would never in any way fully understand or have access to accurate information about what really happened there. And so I was just going to give all versions of the story equal weight. So I'm just going to choose to believe. Rather, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to try to be more positive, because people sometimes say that our program has too negative a bent, or that we refuse to see, you know, where the glass is always half empty with us. Rather than disbelieving everything about the BP oil spill, I am, in fact, going to believe everything.
Oh,
even
okay.
If different versions of the story are in conflict with one another or they can't all possibly be true, I am going to choose to believe every story that is read to me or whatever is being, you know, put in front of me at the current time. You know, at that moment, whatever variation on reality is presented to me, that will be what I choose to view as the gold standard.
Now, do these have to be actually news stories printed by legitimate
publishers? Could be a homeless guy.
So if I just scribbled something on a Post-it note and I said the BP oil spill was caused by dragons?
Yes.
You would believe it?
Exactly. Yes.
I'll keep that in mind.
You know, because it's just sort of, you know, it's my way of trying to embrace the positive side of things.
Hmm.
Rather than instinctively disbelieving, I'm going to choose to be optimistic about the veracity of the stories.
That's very Miley Cyrus of you.
Yeah, well, that's what I do. Huh.
Saudi Arabian security services have captured a vulture suspected of being a Mossad spy sent over by Israel. The bird, which was carrying a GPS transmitter and a tag from Tel Aviv University, strayed into Saudi Arabian territory, according to a report in the Israeli daily Mariv. Residents and reporters told Saudi Arabia's Al Wiam newspaper the matter seemed to be linked to a Zionist plot and swiftly alerted security services. The bird has since been placed under arrest. The accusations went viral with hundreds of posts on Arabic language websites and forums claiming Zionists had trained the birds for espionage. Israeli authorities said the bird's activities were innocent and it was part of a long-term study of the migratory habits of the vulture.
I cannot possibly deduce which aspect of this story is the most ludicrous. I mean, first of all, the idea that the bird has been placed under arrest is a phrase that was put into an actual news story disseminated by legitimate news organizations. And then when you said that it was a vulture that had been sent over as a spy, the first thing I thought of was that, like, that I think it's an unreleased, because they made a Jurassic Park 3, right? Which I think I successfully avoided when it was in the theaters. But there was that script for Jurassic Park 4 that was floating around the net, which I think was not fake, by the way, which involved dinosaurs, I swear to God, dinosaurs that were outfitted with lasers that were just going to be sent into, you know, by the military, of course, because, you know, once the eggheads let the genie out of the bottle, then the military comes in and they use everything for warfare. And then it's like the scrappy ragtag band of misfits has to stop it. So I immediately thought of dinosaurs and then, of course, dolphins with lasers being used to attack things.
Of course.
But then here's the and then of course the idea that it's Zionist propaganda or a Zionist plot, which is just hilarious on the face of it. But then of course when Israel denies it, I of course instinctively assume that they're lying. So this is
wait a minute.
This is just one of those stories where this is sort of like the BP thing in that every version of this story could be true. I mean, it is true that Saudi Arabians are nuts. I mean, that's the thing. Saudi Arabia is an entire country of lunatics. Now, that notwithstanding, let's also, though, not pretend that countries don't spend a lot of time and a lot of money creating bizarre and unorthodox ways of spying on or attacking their neighbors. Let's also not pretend that Israel is somehow exempt, from that broad sweeping statement, because they're not. Like, right now, if I had to place a Vegas line on whether or not Israel actually trained a bird or outfitted a bird with a GPS and a camera to fly over enemy territory and to get, photos or to get some sort of reconnaissance information, I honestly don't know whether I... If I had to pick right now a version of truth in this story, I don't know what it would be. You?
I really don't know.
Because we'd do that. We probably have done that. Hell, we probably sold them the vulture. Let's be honest.
Well, we've strapped bombs to dogs and put little cameras on rats and things. I mean, why?
Didn't we have the story that we're training monkeys to go into battle? Didn't we have that story like 6 months ago? So, I mean, if one assumes that we, the United States, are training animals to go into combat, it's not like it's so outside the realm of possibility that Israel would just be strapping a camera to some, to a seagull and kicking it out over, out of a plane over Saudi Arabia.
On the other hand, though, Saudi Arabia is particularly paranoid about
Zionists.
About Israel. An Egyptian official recently claimed that a shark who attacked tourists off a coastal resort was acting on behalf of Mossad.
By Jews?
Yeah, it was trained by Mossad to attack people. So... One of the psychology's most respected journals has agreed to publish a paper presenting what its author describes as strong evidence for extrasensory perception, the ability to sense future events. The decision might delight believers in so-called paranormal events, but it's already mortifying scientists. Advanced copies of the paper, to be published this year in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology, have circulated widely among psychological researchers in recent weeks and have generated a mixture of amusement and scorn. The paper describes 9 unusual lab experiments performed over the past decade by its author, Daryl J. Bem, an emeritus professor at Cornell, testing the ability of college students to accurately sense random events, like whether a computer program will flash a photograph on the left or right side of the screen. The studies include more than 1,000 subjects. Some scientists say the report deserves to be published in the name of open inquiry, Others insist that its acceptance only accentuates fundamental flaws in the evaluation and peer review of research and social scientists. Ray Hyman, an emeritus professor of psychology at the University of Oregon and a longtime critic of ESP research, says, "It's craziness, pure craziness. I can't believe a major journal is allowing this work in. I think it's just an embarrassment for the entire field."
See, I dig guys like that, you know, the guys who have no problem just coming out with the unvarnished version of things. So here's how I know that that's not real. Here's how I know that, you know, that there's no factual basis for it. It's because as soon as somebody has a factual basis for it, they'll be getting like that $10 million or whatever it is that the Randi Institution has set aside. You know, the James Randi, who's a debunker. I think it was like $1 million when I was a kid, and I think they've actually increased it since then. But the Randi Institute has set aside $1 million in a trust for anybody who can, in lab conditions, in a laboratory setting, demonstrate evidence of ESP or any, you know, or, you know, telekinesis or any sort of, you know, paranormal, you know, or unexplainable superstitious ability, whatever you want to call it. And that's been a standing offer for, I think, I don't know, like 23 years or something. And it's just sort of sitting there. By the way, if I snorted just now, it's because somebody was back on the Vulture story and they were, God help me, they were asking, did they waterbird it during interrogation?
Oh, and you actually gave that a snort?
Twice, because I did it again just now.
Oh, that's not worthy of a snort.
I shouldn't laugh at that.
Oh.
I think it's because the bird is put in all caps, just to make sure that I would...
Waterbird!
Make sure that I wouldn't miss it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay. Hey, this Noel Coward-esque wit is brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find out more about them at squireselectric.com. That is squireselectric.com. You can also call them if you like. It's 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical contractors, installers, and supervisors. They can repair, they can install, they can upgrade. They can come and suss out whatever difficulty you may be having in your home, if it has to do with wiring, if you're plugging something in and it worked, and then there was that time that it didn't work, and you wonder what happened betwixt the two. They can come and they can try to figure out exactly what is going on in the walls of your home or business, and they can get it fixed, and they can get it fixed quickly, they can get it fixed correctly the first time, and you know, without sort of destroying your property money pit style in the meantime.
Or electrocuting your vulture when you attach a GPS and a camera to it.
To the best of our knowledge, anyway. You could contact them at 503-252-1609. They do free estimates, no job too small or too large, and they've been here for over a decade, and they're good folks. So you can contact them at squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. Squires Electric. Here is Don Taylor.
That's all the science.
All right. I think you just say that with an air of resignation.
Actually, I have a whole lot of science because we didn't do a show yesterday, and so I have like a backlog of science, but that's all the science I feel like talking about right now.
When you say it like that, when you say the I have a whole lot of science, you sound a little bit like Pete Puma, who just, you know, I want a whole lot of lumps.
I have a whole lot of science.
Three or four. Here's Don Taylor.
When asked whether the healthcare law should be repealed, Americans are pretty evenly divided, with 46% favoring the move and 40% opposing it. In a survey with a margin of error of 4 percentage points, that's hardly a significant difference. Yet among partisans, the affiliation is clear. Nearly 80% of Republicans favor repealing the law, with about two-thirds of Democrats opposing the move. Among independents, repeal wins out, but by a margin too small to be statistically significant, according to USA Today. Meanwhile, the GOP made a point of questioning estimates that state repealing the health care overhaul would balloon the deficit by $230 billion and leave 32 million more Americans uninsured. In his inaugural press conference as Speaker of the House, John Bonner said the Congressional Budget Office had relied on information from Democrats. CBO is entitled to their opinion, he said on Thursday. Because, you know, those Democrats would be all lying about, like, how much money it would cost and how many people wouldn't have insurance.
Well, I mean,
there's no way to check that.
They probably are lying, but I mean, but that statement just assumes that Republicans aren't. I mean, that's the thing. You just have to, I mean, if you just sort of take it as read, that neither of them is really being honest about this, then, you know, then at least
somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, then at least you have some basis. So a friend of mine used to drive. He had this theory when he was on the highway that if one assumes that most people obey the speed limit to some degree, he said, then you can also assume that most cars are effectively traveling at the same speed. And if most cars are effectively traveling at the same speed, he deduced, you could therefore operate as though they were standing still. And I don't really know that that's true, but he demonstrated this theory to terrifying effect by just zooming in and out of lanes all the time. But that was kind of his theory, is that if everything is sort of equally, if everything is equally, flawed, then you can assume that it's all equally, perfect as well. And so then the truth lies somewhere between. So that's probably the deal with this. But, you know, it's not like they're going to – look, let's just be honest. It's not like they're ever going to fix it. So this is why I have no personal investment in this whatsoever, because it's never going to be solved, ever. Ever. So, you know,
well,
the end.
To counter the Democrats' claims, Republicans have released their own report, which is called, and I am not making this up, Obamacare, a budget-busting, job-killing health care law.
See, that's great, though. I mean, there's just that they don't there's no sense for they don't sense a need for rational, restrained debate or reason, or some sort of a calm discourse with facts, and with actual studies or evidentiary procedures.
Healthcare, threat or menace.
Seriously. I mean, yeah, healthcare hates your children. Healthcare will eat your bones.
So their report, their budget busting job killing, it argues that healthcare repeal would shrink the deficit. Republicans have even come up with an alternative to the healthcare law that takes effect in 2014, though the details are scant. Their alternative plan emphasizes competition and choice in insurance and high-risk pools that have long been popular with Republicans.
It's just like one of those, it's like one of those propaganda posters, from the 40s, about how the yellow menace wants you to get drunk in bars and spill your secret to floozies. So I think I was mentioning this to Eric Schneider when he was in on Wednesday, that that really is one of the huge differences between Republicans and Democrats, is just this sense of noble gentlemanly restraint, whereas the Republicans are all just about full on guerrilla warfare. The Democrats are the Democrats are essentially the British, who are just marching in bright red outfits at the crack of dawn in a straight line, one by one.
Meanwhile, make it fair.
The Republicans are the American insurrectionists who are just hiding in trees and burying themselves inside hay bales or something, and they're just shooting a guy in the knee. So, I mean, that's really the only way you can get things done.
The investigation into what caused thousands of birds to fall from the sky on New Year's Eve over Arkansas continues. Dr. Jonathan Sleeman, which I almost said Sleestack.
Sleeman?
I almost said Sleestack, okay. I swear to God. Dr. Jonathan Sleeman, director of the National Wildlife Health Center in Madison, Wisconsin, says the working theory of fireworks spooking the birds is just that, a theory. He says he's never heard of fireworks causing such an event before.
I guess most of the time we set off fireworks in July when they're not sort of congregating in large flocks like they do in the winter. But it's not outside the realm of possibility.
That's, you know what that is? You know what you can hear at the end of that? Stupid Yank. That's the implied, he can't definitively say that it's not the case because he wasn't there. Right. But he clearly thinks that it's some moronic American,
poppycock is what it is.
It's a lot of balderdash. He doesn't want to come out and say that, but it's so he just does it. He does what all British people do. He just lays it between the snippy lines.
Sleeman says results may not.
Sleeman.
Sleeman. Sleeman says results may.
Only two can go through the doorway. When you came to this world, three left.
I was being Enoch.
I see that.
Enoch the Altrusion.
You still haven't seen the Land of Lost movie, have you?
No, I don't think I can
so
see that.
It's so funny. It is so, so funny. Sleeman says results may... You can come over and watch it on my giant TV.
Thank you.
Sleeman says results may not come for another couple of weeks. He says events like these are unusual but not unique. He says his office has investigated 16 similar events over the past 20 years.
Most of these cases were caused by poisonings, usually exposure to pesticides. But trauma was also quite commonly seen. So it's not that unusual for birds to get disorientated and fly into power lines or fire into radio towers or into buildings.
Is disorientated an actual word, or is it disoriented?
No, it
and
is.
People
This is one of those things where everybody, where I have been fighting an uphill battle about the word orientate for years, because it is a word. It's a word. It's always been a word. And people insist that it's not. And then it's like, I become that jackass. I become the tiresome guy who has to, like, you know, send somebody the like, I have to copy and paste and send someone the definition. You know, and I've had several people over the years try to tell me that orientate. No, in fact, to say orient is wrong. I mean, that's just it, in most situations. Most situations where people say orient, they mean to say orientate. To be oriented and to be orientated, one is attitudinal and one is logistical. One has to do with directions and spatial relations.
Okay.
Orientated, that has to do with that is the relative position of you to something else. So you are orientated like north. Or whatever
okay,
direction
so
you're facing.
So in this case,
right now,
it is actually correct. So because yeah. if you were dizzy and confused, you would be disoriented. But if you couldn't find the direction you needed to go, you would be disorientated.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And so if you're going to say, well, the object is, you know, orientated with, you know, whatever, that yeah, that just has to do with its relative position.
Okay.
So it's just but it's just become one of those things where it's like the words sound so similar that people it's one of those it's that thing where people think. I think they think that they are. It's like how I, but and I'm no exception here because it's not like I'm not like I don't do this. It's like how I have for the longest time. I have said habanero, thinking that I was being accurate. But of course, I'm an American trying to be smarter than I really am because it's habanero.
Yeah, there's no ñ
yeah.
over the and not, so, it's not an ñ.
Yeah, but I was like, well, it's saying you know it can't possibly not have a tilde over it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's anyway that's the thing. So.
Let's do our entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Friday, January 7th, 2011.
My Name is Earl actress Jamie Presley was arrested on suspicion of DUI day before yesterday. The 30-year-old actress was driving in Santa Monica around 11 p.m. Wednesday when she was stopped for an alleged traffic violation, according to TMZ. Presley reportedly failed a field sobriety test and was booked on suspicion of driving under the influence and was held on $15,000 bail. TMZ reports, because this is what they look for apparently in situations like this, TMZ reports there were no drugs or children in Presley's car.
Is that like on a checklist? Do TMZ reporters just have like a little notebook they carry with them where it's like, you know, vagina showing? No. Children? No.
That was going to be the next thing I said.
Vomit on
was
self?
Was she wearing underwear?
Yeah.
Damn, she was. Never mind. Don't need pictures.
Let's do one more here, and then we'll...
A bodyguard for Michael Jackson testified on Wednesday that two of Jackson's children witnessed their father lying unconscious on his bed the day he died, according to People. In the second day of preliminary hearings determining whether Dr. Conrad Murray should be tried for involuntary manslaughter, Alberto Alvarez testified that Jackson's children, Prince and Paris, then 12 and 11, had walked into their father's bedroom while Murray was administering to the unconscious pop star. Paris screamed, "Daddy," and she started crying, and Dr. Murray said, "Get them out. Don't let them see their father like this," Alvarez said. "I turned to the children and I told them, 'Don't worry, children. We'll take care of it. Please go outside.'" Alvarez also testified that Murray had ordered them to put several medical vials in a bag before calling 911. Jackson's sister, Janet and LaToya, his mother Catherine, and father Joe all attended the hearing.
I love that guy, that doctor, because he's just so unbelievably crooked-seeming. I mean, he just like so completely sleazy and slimy in every conceivable way that he's sort of great. I mean, he is like every trait that you have ever seen ascribed to a shady doctor in a Hollywood production, like embodied in one actual person. There's that whole thing about like when he found that Michael Jackson was dead, the first thing he did was actually to not call 911, but to dispatch some people to like his private storage facility to just burn a bunch of things. Like where they just saw these two women who have never been identified just carting out like dozens of boxes of documents and then just shredding and burning them. And you know, and it's like, to the best of my knowledge, nobody's ever asked him about that, or he's never responded. At least, like he's never said, "Well, here's why I did that." I mean, it's just like so unbelievably, like undeniably corrupt that it's sort of awesome. So I look for now. Is he going on trial? Is that the thing?
They're investigating, basically what he did. Whether or not he should be tried for involuntary manslaughter. So it's like they're just looking at the way his treatment
what,
of
in what
Jackson.
Insane world would you not put him on trial for something? I mean, like, what possible reason would there be, whether or not he killed Michael Jackson, and I think we can all agree that Michael Jackson probably brought a lot of his drug issues on himself, but in what world is he not guilty of something? I mean, in my assessment.
I think the thing is, though, they just have to find the right collection of things to say, okay, this pile is high enough that we can now charge you.
All right. Well, you know, the good news is, I guess if you go to California and commit a crime, there is almost no way that they will put you on trial with anything remotely approaching efficiency or speed. So, I mean, you got, like, just years and years of, you know, of crimes you can commit after that, I guess. We should bring it into the quasi-truncated installment of Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. The Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemersonshow.com. Following a brief musical interlude today, Corpse Watch, Nazi Watch, round three of Name That Snack, and Big Jim Willig will be on the show with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101, today talking about Mr. Lewis Black. At the news desk today, Don Taylor, and sometimes Patrick, and
occasionally Rick Emerson.
And sometimes me, not very often. Advanced Technology Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Sagler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. This program will be available later on today via iTunes, also as a direct MP3 download here, or at legionofnews.com. Thank you for joining us. Have a fantastic weekend. We will see you Monday at noon for Legion of News. Have a great Friday, won't you?